On the programme, Ned Kelly, the hero, the myth, the masterful paintings by Sidney Nolan on show at Imma. Hello and welcome to Arts Tonight and to the Sidney Nolan exhibition of Ned Kelly paintings at the Irish Museum of Modern Art.
In Australia, a bandit or an outlaw is called a bushranger. One of Australia's most infamous bushranger was a man named Ned Kelly. Ned Kelly was a wild young bushranger. Out of Victoria he rode with his brother Dan. He loved his people and he loved his freedom. And he loved to ride the wide open land. Ned Kelly was a victim of the changes that came when his land was a sprouting seed. And the wrongs he did were multiplied in legend, with young Australia growing like a weed. Ned Kelly took the blame, Ned Kelly won the fame. Ned Kelly brought the shame, and then Ned Kelly hanged.
Ned Kelly was a young working-class Australian of Irish extraction whose life just spun out of control in 1878 when he found himself a wanted man, not for the first time, we might add, but this time things got very, very serious. He ended up with his younger brother and two friends shooting three policemen dead. And at that point, a very large manhunt was launched to try and capture him. And this incredible story, which takes 2 years to unfurl, is then sprung into action, an apocalyptic story of death and robbery and land and power. An ordinary person facing up to the big forces of law and order.
Hamish Maxwell-Stewart, and more from him later in the programme.
Ned Kelly brought the shame, and then Ned Kelly hanged.
Sidney Nolan, whose work we're looking at tonight, is regarded as one of the great painters of Australia, one of the first white Australians to paint the country's landscape with a true eye in all its harshness and glory. Like many Australians, Nolan had a strong Irish background and was both aware of that inheritance and proud of it. There's no doubt this influenced his extraordinary series of paintings based on the life, the story, the myth of Ned Kelly, bushranger, bank robber and rebel, to some a kind of Australian Robin Hood, to others a common or uncommon criminal.
When somebody pops up with an iron mask on him on a horse, he really stands out. And when he has a kind of a mad eloquence, a kind of curious, twisted sense of historical justice. Anyway, he keeps on pumping it out like Finnegan's Wake. It stands out because there isn't much else. That's one thing. The other thing is that in that kind of frontier, that way of life, that Kelly was an expert. You know, he only pinched the best horses. He was a wonderful shot. He only robbed the rich, and he was gallant to women. And he was a bit anarchic, and in fact, the Australians took to him. And more specifically, my grandfather chased him around. He was a policeman, my grandfather. So in a quite genuine way, I heard about these things from my mother's knee, you know, from the ground up. So when I came to try and paint something that would represent violence and the ambiguity of violence, I chose Kelly.
The late Sidney Nolan there in an interview with Liam Nolan from 1973. And 20 years after Sidney Nolan's death, a significant collection of 26 of his Ned Kelly paintings are on loan to the Irish Museum of Modern Art at Kilmainham in Dublin. We're going to visit that exhibition with Hamish Maxwell-Stewart, whom you heard earlier, visiting professor at UCD and from the University of Tasmania, and Dr. Yvonne Scott, head of art history at Trinity College Dublin. First, Rachel Thomas, head of exhibitions at IMA, on this visiting exhibition from the National Gallery of Australia.
We have been in talks with them for the last couple of years, actually, in securing this, because they don't come like an ordinary, like one aeroplane over. We had to do separate consignments. It's almost like they're such a national treasure that we had to actually organise two separate plane journeys, separate crating, because they are a kind of treasure in Australia. So it was negotiations, talks, raising funding for this. And then what we wanted to do is combine it with our own works in the collection.
And of course, it's really significant that as well as the Ned Kelly paintings, there are some of the paintings that Nolan made here and donated to Imma, the Wild Geese paintings from 1989.
That's right. We have six of them on display in the basement here in the museum. These were donated to the museum, and we're delighted to show them because actually it has a nice juxtaposition with the early works of Ned Kelly, the infamous bushranger. And then we have the later works that the collection owns by Sidney Nolan, which shows more abstract brushstroke, greater uses of colour, a more freedom of expression, whereas the Nolan pieces are very tightly condensed, humorous, funny. And then we have the later works, which are more poetic, more influenced by James Joyce, have more a meditative meaning on reflection, and also then you can kind of compare the two. So it's almost nice to show a whole sweeping history of Sidney Nolan.
Yvonne Scott, we're standing in front of this extraordinary Sidney Nolan landscape, Australia, glowing out of it, and the desert and the blue sky, and Ned Kelly on horseback. It is an amazing painting.
It really is. I think what makes this particularly interesting painting is the way he's composed it, where he's got the figure of Ned Kelly right in the very centre, giving this vertical break in the painting, and then you've got this horizontal edge of the horizon cutting across in the other direction and completely breaking the traditional rules of how landscape should be composed. And he's given us Ned Kelly. He's a very authoritative figure. We see him from behind the back of the horse and looking out on the landscape. And you notice the way with the armour he has given you a view through into the sky through that the slot through which Ned Kelly can view from his armour, almost as if we are Ned Kelly. That's the view that Kelly had, and that's the view that we have of the landscape. And I think one of the really interesting things about this painting as well is how he's represented the landscape, completely broken with the traditional way that landscape would be represented, because he gives us just this line in the distance with a scrubby line of trees. There's no destination in this landscape. There's no protection from the elements in this landscape. And you feel very, very exposed, in a sense.
And just thinking, again, it's three elements in the figure. You know, it's horse, man, and musket. And man is almost anonymous because the slit in the armour, in the headpiece of the armour, is blank. You see the sky through it, and it is an amazing image.
Yes, it certainly is. And the way he's represented the figure, and this is how Kelly is represented in all of the paintings. It's this flat black silhouette. We don't see any details. We don't see any characteristics. And this has become really an iconic symbol. This is what we recognise in every Ned Kelly landscape we see, or a picture of Ned Kelly in the landscape, is this black figure. I think it's interesting to think about the materials that he was using, because again, he was using non-traditional materials. He wasn't using oil. He was using commercial paints. He had trained in design and craft rather than in fine art, and so he's using materials that really challenge the painting traditions of the establishment.
When were the paintings made?
These were painted in the 1940s, in the mid-40s, not that very long after the end of the war. And one of the things I think is interesting to consider is how young he was. He was under 30. He was born in 1917, so he was under 30 when he painted these. And it's said that he identified with the Kelly character himself. Sidney Nolan had been called up into the army in 1942, and in 1944 went AWOL. So he was a rule breaker, if you like. And what I suppose what's interesting with this idea that he identifies with Kelly is that one of the reasons why he decided to go AWOL was he said that, you know, he had no intention of carrying a gun or shooting at anyone, which is almost the reverse of Ned Kelly's situation. But at any rate, he took an assumed name and disappeared. We don't know where.
Became a rebel with a paintbrush.
Exactly.
And I suppose that rebellion is real as well, because in a way, was he one of the first Australian painters to paint the landscape of Australia without any particular European sensibility?
Yes, I think this is one of the things that's really remarkable about him. When we look at the history of Australian landscape painting, we see the earliest paintings by the artists who were among the first settlers, and they represent the landscape as exotic but also very fruitful, and where they have the native Australians, the indigenous Australians represented, they're as kind of noble savages. So this was a nice, safe landscape for settlers to go to. And then as time goes on, we find that the landscape, even though it develops and gets more sophisticated in its representation, it's still European. It's still for a European market, essentially, or settlers who are from a European background. By the time we come to the work that Sidney Nolan is doing, he seems to be looking at the landscape in a much more realistic way. Even though they're not illusionistically realistic, he confronts the landscape as it actually is. And we see from the range of paintings here just how extraordinarily beautiful the landscape is, but it's not benign. He doesn't prettify it, he confronts it as it is. And I suppose Ned Kelly and his family would have been acutely aware of what the landscape was like. The family farm, the holding that Red Kelly, his father, had. I think that he was able to buy it from the proceeds of gold prospecting, but at any rate he had, you know, substantial number of acres to start off, enough to live on. But they were blighted by drought. And, of course, this is part of the reality of how, you know, what people had to confront at the time. And that really unseated the family effectively and ultimately led to the life of crime that we know how that ended up.
It's very interesting as well that, you know, I think Sidney Nolan said at one point that to understand a country, you had to understand the myth. It was really through the myth of a country that you came to understand the country.
Yes.
And what he's doing as well is creating, he's responding to the myth of Ned Kelly, but making it all of Australia, like the landscapes are often desert landscapes. They're not the more pastoral landscapes of Victoria.
Yes.
It's a very different Australia he represents. It's the all of Australia.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right there. Now, I'm not sufficiently familiar with Victoria to be absolutely certain just how accurate they all are. And we see a great variety of landscapes here, the mountain ranges as well as the flat plains. But I think in works such as this one that we're looking at of Ned Kelly within this very flat desert landscape, what he's doing is, as you say, he is representing an Australian, a national landscape as opposed to a regional landscape.
On that point of landscape and history, Dr. Hamish Maxwell-Stewart, Victoria, the setting for Ned Kelly, the Ned Kelly narrative, the Kelly gang, all of that. But what Sidney Nolan is doing is making this an Australian story, which it had already become.
Absolutely. And what he's doing is he's painting on a continental scale here. Nolan knew the Kelly story really well. He knew the landscape in which the bushranging outbreak occurred. And that, you can see the Wombat Ranges in some of the paintings in the series. But the great majority of them are of a completely different landscape. It's got, you know, the big Australian sweeping plain. You can feel the heat when you look at them. And what he's done is he's separated the myth from the man. You don't really see Kelly as a person in these paintings. You see what Kelly symbolises. And, you know, I think that's what makes them powerful, iconic, troublesome. It makes them really, really dramatic.
Of course, the whole Kelly story from 1880, that the hold-up of the bank at Jerilderie, and that incredible letter that Ned Kelly wrote, you know, the Jerilderie letter, full of passion and fire and invective, you know, a really political statement. I mean, he was a really interesting man.
He was, but for Australians, he's always been a problematic figure. So the big end of town continues to paint him as a dangerous police killer. So, you know, a larrikin who went very, very bad. And there's always been an element of Australian society that's tried to suppress the Kelly myth, tried to push him back down into a criminal box. And then there's another force pushing the other way, which says that the story is much, much wider than that. That this is a story about fighting for land rights. And there's a struggle for land, which Nolan knew about and has captured very, very strongly in this whole series. So the story is this, that in the 1830s and 40s, large parts of southeastern Australia were acquired totally illegally by large landholders. They became what was known as the squatocracy. Now, later on, in the 1850s and 60s, small-scale holdings were cut out of this large pastoral landscape and settled by what was called selectors, including members of the Kelly family. Now, the Irish took the smallest holdings. So they thought that an 80-acre block was a huge, great big estate. But in Australia, you really need 300-400 acres at least to make a go of farming. And many of the selectors fell into trouble. A land war broke out with the squatters, who tried to use the police and the law to force small-scale landholders off the landscape. And the Kelly outbreak, this 2 years of violence, springs out of that wider picture. So for many Australians, this is a story about land and about the rights of the small-scale farmer and about the big end of town trying to seize a continent.
They did use, I mean, Kelly made armour, homemade armour. And the image that Sidney Nolan is painting is based on absolute reality. And you're saying that Kelly's armour is one of the most iconographic images in Australia.
Absolutely. I mean, when the National Museum of Australia was put together, that people had to sit down and think, what are the great objects of Australia? And number one, it's Kelly's armour, beaten into shape out of ploughshares. It's a wonderful image, and captured in that black enamel paint so well, I think, by Nolan.
It has echoes of Don Quixote and, the eternal, the universal rebel. And there's a certain incongruity as well of this figure in armour in a landscape, in a kind of desert landscape. You were saying as well that the Kelly story had entered Aboriginal storytelling in Arnhem Land.
It's gone everywhere. I mean, there are lots and lots of Aboriginal Dreamtime stories which encompass white iconic figures, settler figures. One of my very, very favourites involves Kelly, and it's very short. It goes like this. Ned Kelly was the first white fella to come up here. He was the black fella's mate. Then Captain Cook came, shot Ned Kelly, and stole the land. And Kelly becomes, in Aboriginal terms, an iconic figure who's still walking the land. Yet he's a mythical being who symbolises land rights in a way that white Australia would recognise. And, of course, that's why the story has been developed. It's become a way that Aboriginal people can communicate their anger about land to white Australia by using a white Australian symbol about, the small end of town being crushed by the big.
They're hot on your tail, or they're gonna hang you high. brother that I call a hue, a stranger so brave.
Iconic as Ned Kelly's armour has become and potent as his myth may be, perhaps his most enduring testament comes in the form of the famous Gerildery letter, a handwritten statement by Kelly given to the bank teller at the town of Gerildery in Victoria when the Kellys set siege to the place. It's a great run of anger and eloquence, this extract read by Carl Matheson.
I've been wronged, and my mother and four or five men lagged innocent. And is my brothers and sisters and my mother not to be pitied also, who has no alternative only to put up with the brutal and cowardly conduct of a parcel of big, ugly, fat-necked, wombat-headed, big-bellied, magpie-legged, narrow-hipped, splay-footed sons of Irish bailiffs or English landlords, which is better known as officers of justice or Victorian police, who some calls honest gentlemen. But I would like to know what business an honest man would have in the police. As it is an old saying, it takes a rogue to catch a rogue. And a man that knows nothing about roguery would never enter the force and take an oath to arrest brother, sister, father or mother if required, and to have a case and conviction if possible. Any man knows it is possible to swear a lie, and if a policeman loses a conviction for the sake of swearing a lie, he has broke his oath. Therefore, he is a perjurer either ways. A policeman is a disgrace to his country, not alone to the mother that suckled him. In the first place, he is a rogue in his heart, but too cowardly to follow it up without having the force to disguise it. Next, he is a traitor to his country, ancestors, and religion, as they were all Catholics before the Saxons and Cranmore yoke held sway. Since then, they were persecuted, massacred, thrown into martyrdom, and tortured beyond the ideas of the present generation. What would people say if they saw a strapping big lump of an Irishman shepherding sheep for 15 bob a week, or tailing turkeys in Tallaroke Ranges for a smile from Julia, or even begging his tucker? They would say he ought to be ashamed of himself, and tar and feather him. But he would be a king to a policeman, who for a lazy, loafing, cowardly billet left the ash corner and deserted the shamrock, the emblem of true wit and beauty, to serve under a flag and nation that has destroyed, massacred, and murdered their forefathers by the greatest of torture, such as rolling them downhill in spiked barrels, pulling out their toe and fingernails, and on the wheel and every torture imaginable. More was transported to Van Diemen's Land to pine their young lives away in starvation and misery, among tyrants worse than the promised hell itself. All of true blood, bone and beauty, that was not murdered on their own soil or had fled to America or other countries to bloom again another day, were doomed to Port Macquarie, Toongabby, Norfolk Island and Emu Plains, and in those places of tyranny and condemnation, many a blooming Irishman, rather than subdue to the Saxon yoke, were flogged to death and bravely died in servile chains, but true to the shamrock and a credit to Paddy's Land.
It, again, Kelly's story coming right up to the present. The Sydney Olympics, the big display using sort of replicas of Sydney, of Kelly's armour, and you were saying the musket as well, that they used Sidney Nolan's image of the musket in this.
And there were hundreds of Kellys that ran out into the arena with fireworks coming out of the muskets, and the crowd just went wild. You know, because this was, you know, one of the great Australian images, reproduced again and again and again and brought to life on a world stage.
Yvonne, I think it's fair to say that Nolan is not only one of the greatest Australian painters, but really a world-class painter. I mean, I think a couple of the Ned Kelly paintings were chosen by a few people to represent some of the finest paintings in the history of humanity, and they are extraordinary.
I think they are, because they deal with kind of universal issues, you know, issues of injustice, issues of identity, issues of nationality. I mean, I think one of the interesting things that has come across in a recent documentary that was made by Barry Dowdall is, just how the figure of Ned Kelly was treated. When I first came across him, I was wondering whether, why was he made into such an iconic hero? After all, he robbed banks, he shot policemen. He generally was, could have been quite a difficult character. He stole horses and cattle and so on. But one of the things that came out, that has come out in documentaries such as that, is to really look at the truth of the story and the kind of situation that family found themselves within, and the kind of injustice that went on, so that you start to realise, just exactly what he was doing. And Sidney Nolan saw him as this rebel who was representing the local people. Apparently, when the banks were robbed, for example, the money was given, to the locals who were frantically trying to pay their rents in order to stay on the land. And I think this is a story, certainly in Ireland, that one can identify with. It's an international story, essentially.
Many, many echoes of Irish history as well. Because what I was saying, in the Kelly gang, raise on the banks. They burned the mortgage deeds, didn't they?
Absolutely. This was a story that had a lot more going for it than just robbing banks. What the Kellys wanted to do was address a whole set of wrongs. Now, what's really interesting is that they saw those wrongs as not just being located in northeastern Victoria, but as being a set of issues that had a wider Irish dimension, and indeed even an American dimension. And one of the things that Kelly talks about in the Gerildery letter is the Irish diaspora and the way that it's been pushed out of Ireland by the tyranny of the Anglo-Saxon yoke. And these other wars are being fought in other places where the Irish are always pushed to the margins. And one of the things that really annoyed him was that so many of the policemen who were out hunting for the Kelly gang were Irish themselves. So a great deal of the letter is berating Irish people for not standing together to oppose the injustices that have been perpetrated against them.
I suppose, again, that complexity of history must have been something that interested Nolan in looking at the myth. And, of course, Nolan had a strong Irish background as well, and he came and spent time here.
Yes, absolutely. And there is this double link with the series in Ireland because of that. And there's a link, obviously, with Nolan, who has an Irish name, and there's the link with the Kellys themselves. And Kelly's father was transported from Tipperary, spent time as a convict in Tasmania before coming to Victoria. But Kelly's mother's family, the Quinns, were also Irish migrants as well. They were free migrants who came during the Gold Rush.
Yvonne, what for you makes Nolan such an important painter? What is it about his style? Because I suppose we should say as well that there was, and you made that point, that there was a great diversity of style, as well as the paintings like this, the famous Ned Kelly series. There's a wonderful, huge painting that I think is in Hobart now, of this huge snake.
Oh, the snake, exactly. I think one of the most important things about him is the way he manages to bring together national interests and international interests, and that's quite a difficult thing to do, and it's obviously been a challenge for Irish painters also around about the same time. So he is very aware of what's going on in Europe. He draws on a whole range of ideas. He's interested in naive art, the naive art of Rousseau. He's interested in the confrontation of space in Cézanne. He's also aware of the paintings of Goya and his series on war. And all of these ideas seem to come together and to be regenerated in a very original and different kind of way in Sidney Nolan's work. He draws on the naive style that was prevalent in Europe at the time, but makes it very much his own. And there is a kind of deceptive simplicity about what he's doing in his work, but in bringing together the national interests, which we might think of as being rather traditional and looking to the past, and of course so much of his work is looking to historical stories, you know, the Burke and Wills expedition from Melbourne to the Gulf of Carpentaria, obviously the Ned Kelly stories. He's looking at these narratives from the past, but making them very contemporary. And in fact, I think they're contemporary actually for our own time as well when you consider many of the issues that he's dealing with. I mean, one of the things I find fascinating is this Irish connection with Sidney Nolan and Ned Kelly, but also to know that the so-called baddies, if you like, in the narrative, the constables, the justice who ordered his hanging, also were Irish as well. So it's a much more complex and I suppose for that reason much more engaging story in his work.
Hamish, the paintings are also very true to the narrative. I mean, they really tell the story, don't they?
Nolan knew the story very well, and he was very interested in the area. He walked the ground, he talked to local people. And yes, you can follow the story in intense detail through the paintings. You can look at them and find, you know, little snatches of bits and pieces in the paintings, which relate to, you know, the intricate details of the Kelly story. So, you know, I think that they're one of the great histories of the Kelly gang.
Yvonne, this painting, Constant Fitzpatrick and Kate Kelly, it is, again, the naive quality. But the life coming out of it, and there's also somehow there's a kind of almost a subversive humour in it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he refers in to some of his works in terms of comic opera, and so there is an element of that in the works, and that ties in with the naivety. But I think this work is very interesting as it sort of kickstarts the events that ultimately lead to Ned Kelly's hanging and you know, the way he's ultimately lauded. This painting depicts the scene where Kate Kelly, his sister, who's just 14 years old, is in, you can see she's in a domestic interior, and Constable Fitzpatrick arrives to the house, apparently in a state of drunkenness, and makes unsuitable advances to her. And it was the defence of the daughter that led to the mother ultimately being imprisoned with a baby who's only 4 days old. But just in terms of the way the image is represented, we tend to think of Sidney Nolan in terms of these great masculine outdoor scenes, but here we have him within a domestic interior, and I think it's quite interesting the way he's represented it, because you see the way the room is wallpapered with this floral design. So once nature is brought into the interior, it's given this lovely order and decorative quality. And you see the bowl of flowers here. Again, nature's made very orderly. So you get this contrast between the interior feminine space and the exterior, which is the more masculine space. You see through the window, you can see Ned Kelly peering in, observing this event, and just standing impassively waiting for his moment. Of course, I think that actually possibly contradicts the history. I think Ned was thought to have been hundreds of miles away when this event happened. But nonetheless, what Sidney Nolan done is he's conflated these aspects of the story.
And that wonderful framing of Ned in the exterior is brilliant.
Yeah, and it opens up the interior space. It makes it less closed in. You know, it opens it up. And again, you've got this national outback of Australia.
I also love the fire in the stove theory. It's a sign of what's to come.
Absolutely. And the Kelly figure through the window is just wonderful, because Fitzpatrick said that Kelly was there. Kelly said that he wasn't. So, you know, we have these two. All the way through the Kelly outbreak, there are two stories. There's the story of the police, and there's the story of the Kelly family. And they don't easily come together. So the figure in the window is very, very enigmatic, and he's meant to be enigmatic.
There's also this terrific painting over here, which is again is playing with space, with expectation, and you have a constable suspended upside down. It's a remarkable painting.
Well, this is the event which propelled the Kelly story into a national story at the time. It's the shooting at Stringy Bark Creek, where Kelly and his younger brother Dan and two friends of theirs, Joe Byrne and Steve Hart, were all hiding in the Wombat Ranges, and they knew that four policemen had been sent out to try and bring them in. And they also knew that the policemen were very heavily armed. In fact, the Kelly family always said that the policemen brought sufficient equipment in, like body straps on the horses, that they intended to kill them. But the Kellys ambushed two of the policemen and waited until the other two arrived at the camp. When the other two rode in, one of them reached for his Spencer rifle, and so a firefight broke out, and in a matter of seconds, three of the constables were dead, and the whole story had become a manhunt with an £8,000 reward on Ned Kelly's head. And I think what's dramatic about this is that you've got that kinetic energy of this thing which happened in a split second, where a constable reaches for his rifle and is shot by the Kelly gang and spins off the horse, but he's caught upside down in midair by Nolan.
Even again, there are almost echoes of Chagall, you know, the flight, as it were, the midair movement.
Yeah, this painting always makes me think of Chagall, that figure, as you say, floating through the air. I mean, if he's been shot and he's been propelled off a horse, I mean, I don't think that's how you actually, in reality, would negotiate the space. But the figure upside down, kind of constantly falling, certainly suggests Chagall to me. And I think it makes an interesting contrast then. We see just how aware the artist is of the various modernist movements, because the figure of Ned Kelly, who we see then on the left-hand side, in this flat black for almost abstract shape, which has been associated with the pioneering work of Malevich. So you just see how aware he was of the various things that are going on internationally, and then he brings them together in this regeneration, this kind of renewed vision within the Australian landscape.
So one of the things that I really like about this is that the Constable Scanlon's cartwheeling through the sky has this blue jacket on, but the buttons on all of the policemen's jackets right the way through the series are painted as though they're the Southern Cross. So for any Australian, that would be what you would see in the sky and think of home.
So it's like looking at the sky.
It's like looking at the sky.
Wonderful. Yeah. It's striking as well that here in the Ned Kelly figure, we see his eyes through the slit. It's not as anonymous.
That's right, yes. And it's actually something that's quite interesting to do is to look at the various different paintings and see what can you see through the slit, because it varies from painting to painting. Sometimes the eyes are wide open. Here they seem to be almost shut.
Wonderfully impassive.
Yes, exactly, as he maybe sort of takes cognizance of what he's done and what the consequences are going to be.
Nolan's use of colour as well is extraordinary. I mean, here we have these vivid yellows contrasting the pale yellow, then this dark yellow of the musket and the blue of the constable's uniform and green. Over here then, this wonderful kind of mountain range, kind of beautiful kind of purple streak. White and brown. I mean, he was a master of colour.
He really was, and I think that's something that you don't necessarily pick up straight away. It's after you're looking at them again and again, and the slow release, I think, of really just how interesting, how nuanced and how complex they are. But just looking at the skies, for example, the subtle colours, you can look at them for hours and they still continue to reveal what they're about. The painting that you were talking about here with the flat plains and then the mountains in the distance, from my very limited knowledge of the landscape of Victoria, it looks like the Wimmera, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, plains and Mount Arapiles, which we know he used to go up there and look at the landscape from there, sometimes taking a high viewpoint and maybe imagining himself seeing the, looking around and seeing the land, looking for constables that Ned Kelly would have done.
Hamish, who's the figure on horseback in this?
Steve Hart. I mean, all of the young men who were involved in the Kelly outbreak were very, very good horse riders. One of the things that they used to do was take horses to Melbourne to sell them. They used to ride in local races. And there was a story that Steve Hart could ride a horse side saddle as fast as somebody could ride it normally. So that's what's going on there.
And there's a touch of transvestism as well in that painting. And I think Peter Carey used that as well in his novel Base, you know, on the Kelly Gang. And it's again, it's subversive. You know, Nolan's doing so much in these paintings.
He makes Kelly and the other members of the gang slippery figures, which I think is really, really important to so that they keep that enigmatic quality. You can't quite get hold of them. Like you were saying with the eyes through the through the slit in the visor, that they're constantly changing. That, it's very, very difficult to put your finger down on who Kelly is or who the other young men in the outbreak are.
And quite what they represent.
Absolutely.
They turned him out of Beechworth Jail in 1871. He put in 3 long years behind those walls for the stealing of a horse, which he swore he'd never done. But now he sees the sun and turns his back upon it all. Walk softly, cried the magistrate who counted up the score. Walk softly, cried the turnkey as he clanged the iron door. Walk softly, cried his comrades cringing on that prison floor. But the summer's on the meadow, and the wind is in the gum tree, and the Beechworth Jail is many miles behind you. In a prison ship and shackles, his father reached this land. He stole 1 pig, and for that crime he paid. Inside a cold, dark prison cell, he died a broken man. And he left his wife to curse the crown while his children dug his grave. Speak softly, cried the jailer, laying slop upon his plate. Speak softly, cried the turnkey as he opened up the gate. Speak softly, cried his mother, it's been oh so long to wait. But the summer's on the meadow, and the wind is in the gum tree, and the Beechworth Jail is many miles behind you. They told him it was over and his song was damn well sung. They told him wild Australia'd have to change, and he better watch his temper and he better mind his tongue. For the next time that he walked inside those gates, he'd surely hang. Speak boldly, cried his father from the grave in which he lay. Speak boldly, cried his country, there's a trust that's been betrayed. Speak boldly, cried his conscience, there's a debt, and it must be paid. But the summer's on the meadow, and the wind is in the gum trees, and the Beechworth Jail is many miles behind you.
Hamish, I suppose here in the last room, as the end of the narrative, the end of the Kelly story, as it were, and the siege at Glenrowan, remind us of that.
Well, it's it's the apocalyptic climax for the story, and the Kellys must have known that at some point there would be an end, and what they did was shoot an informer and try and attract the police to them, and very importantly, the Aboriginal trackers who are with the police. They feared the Aboriginal trackers, and they wanted to derail the police train as it came into town and then meet their pursuit party dressed in this armour made from ploughshares. And the whole thing goes terribly badly wrong. The train doesn't arrive on time. that some of the people that they bailed up as hostages get away and warn the police. And so the four members of the Kelly gang end up being bailed up in the Glen Rowan Hotel. And there's civilians inside, there's police and Aboriginal trackers outside, there's shots going everywhere. And Nolan captures the chaos of the scene. And, you know, and again, you've got these different views through Kelly's visor. That, you know, sometimes he's really threatening, and other times he looks really worried. He's panicking himself.
And this incredible kind of glow of fire in the sky, but you get the sense of danger of and of chaos as well. I mean, they're brilliant paintings.
Yes, absolutely. It's, you know, a dangerous moment where it becomes difficult to extract right and wrong out of this mess that's going on.
And, of course, it ends up in court, and there's this wonderful painting of Kelly in the dock, and again, in his suit of armour. It's a remarkable painting.
Yes, it is. And, of course, one of the things that's very, very dramatic about this is that other than the iconic armour, the other image of Kelly is the photograph that was taken just before his execution. So that, there would be a temptation, I think, in any Australian mind to see that figure in the dock rather than the armour. And the other thing which I think is just brilliant about this is that Kelly obscures the jury. So it's justice behind, but Kelly is blocking them out from the viewers. You know, you cannot see justice in action because the Kelly legend is looming right in front. And again, asking you to try and pick sides in this chaotic story.
So justice is at least obscured,
yes,
if not blind.
Yes, there is no easy moral route through this story.
And Yvonne, I suppose, again, the brilliance of the entire series is that consistency of the image of Kelly in the armour. So it is a brilliant image.
It really is. I mean, he's given us a really iconic figure in Ned Kelly and the way he's represented him. So even in a situation where he certainly wouldn't have been still wearing his armour, in order that we identify him and identify with him, he's shown in that particular way. And he's given a tremendous contrast. See the way he's given the floor tiles, this sort of red and white pattern that makes him really, really stand out within this interior. And then you see the views out through the windows of Melbourne, the coast and the ships and so on. And then the figure is arranged around, and he's completely dispensed with any kind of sense of proportion of the figures in order to give Kelly this very central, very, very, very dominant position.
These are some of the great paintings of Australia. We're really lucky to have them in Ireland.
I think it's unbelievable. I'm very grateful to Australia for letting us have them for the length of time that we do. It's really wonderful to have an opportunity to see them. And I imagine we'll all be sort of heading for Australia to see the rest of them.
Because you were saying it would be a bit like us sending the Book of Kells, which we have done.
Yeah.
But it's as significant as that in terms of Australian art.
Well, it really is. The Book of Kells, as you know, went to Australia, so it's only fair that we get these back. But it's because people travel so far to see these. These are, you make a pilgrimage to see Kelly works as people come to see the Book of Kells. And for Australia to allow us to have them for this length of time is an incredible act of generosity. And we all should take full advantage of coming to see them while we can.
One Sunday morning as I went walking by Brisbane's waters, I chanced to stray. I heard a prisoner, his fate bewailing, as on the sunny river banks he lay. I am a native of Heron's Island, transported now from my native shore. They tore me from my aged parents and from the maiden whom I adore. I've been a prisoner at Port Macquarie, at Norfolk Island and Emu Plains, at Castle Hill and Kersetoon Gabby. At all those settlements I've worked in chains. But of all places of condemnation and penal stations of New South Wales, of Moreton Bay, I have found no equal. Excessive tyranny
For 3 long years I was beastly treated, and heavy irons on my legs I wore. My back from flogging was lacerated, and often stained with my crimson gore. And many a man from downright starvation lies mouldering underneath the clay. And Captain Logan, he had us mangled at the Triangles in Morden Bay. Like the Egyptians and ancient Hebrews, we were oppressed under Logan's yoke. Till a native black lying there in ambush did give our tyrant his mortal stroke. My fellow prisoners exhilarated that all such monsters a death shall find. And when from bondage we're liberated, our former suffering shall fade from mine.
Morton Bay, a text by convict poet Francis McNamara, sung by Bernard Fanning. And earlier in the programme you heard Johnny Cash with Ned Kelly, The Ballad of Ned Kelly with Trevor Lucas and Sandy Denny, and Waylon Jennings with another Ned Kelly. Thanks to Hamish Maxwell Stewart, Yvonne Scott and all at IMA. The Sidney Nolan exhibition at the New Galleries at IMA in Kilmainham in Dublin continues until January the 27th. That's it from us. Before we go, thanks to everyone who applied for tickets for our special studio recording with Kaleidoscope next week. We're now booked out for that event. If you applied for tickets for it and haven't heard from us, we'll be in touch very soon. Sarah Binchy produced tonight's programme from